Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 8:55 p.m. And that is British summertime. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. And today is July 14th. I thought we'd kick off with the gold price adjusted for purchasing power parity over the last 50 years, and we can clearly see that there was a spike high right at the end of the 1970s, and it has not been exceeded in that purchasing power parity adjusted fashion. We got up to test the peak in of the or the 2012 peak a couple of years ago, and since then gold has been consolidating. So now the big question for everyone is, are we on the cusp of a new big bull market? And that is going to have the answer to that will have longer term ramifications for several different asset classes. In nominal terms, gold prices are firming now from the region of the 200-day moving average, and they've been going sideways for 3 years. And that entire range, which has been fairly volatile, and we've had examples of both failed upside and downside breaks, it has been reasonably steady and is still going on, but it's right in the region of that peak from back in 2011. This continues to look like a consolidation. And then, of course, it does beg the question, is this a consolidation? I say that it looks like a consolidation, but is that materially different from the peak that we had back in 2011 and 12? So on that occasion, it's worth considering that prices had been going up for 10 years, and gold had posted a positive return for 10 consecutive years, and that massively outperformed stocks over that time frame. And there was a clear temptation to think that the period of very consistent trading ahead of the peak in 2011 was less consequential than the previous pattern of ranges that lasted for about 18 months, and then we had a consistent period where we'd had these big explosive moves higher on in the Septembers of uneven years. And that was almost money in the bank from the perspective of investors. So what happened then was in 2009 it broke out. And it broke out in September of 2009, and then it went up. And it was natural to anticipate that we were going to have another 18-month consolidation, but we got around to September of 2011, or 2010, I should say, and it was still breaking higher. We got up to September of 2011, and it was still breaking higher. So that was a very clear acceleration. But then prices went sideways, and lots of people were anticipating that there was going to be a another consolidation similar to the kinds that we'd seen before, but interest rates were rising, and then we also had had incredible enthusiasm where there was buy your gold type operations on many street corners. There was the commodity bull market that had been going on for the same amount of time. There had been preeminence of performance from emerging markets. So as we think then about what might be contained in a new gold bull market, it is, I think, also worth considering that it's quite likely that if gold does break on the upside, it will benefit from many of the same kinds of factors that would contribute to a big bull market in emerging markets and commodities as well. So then we should be thinking about what is likely on that front. And there are two big factors for a bull market in gold. And the first one is something that I think most people are familiar with, which is the inverse correlation with the dollar. So when we look at the dollar index, it has this very long-term cyclicality, and it's almost biblical in nature, where we get 7 good years followed by 7 bad years, and we have plenty of evidence of that. But What makes it difficult is that it does not just go in a sawtooth manner, that you do get a fair bit of messing around in between. Now, let's just put into perspective here that we had this phenomenal advance, really, from in the early 1980s. And the index bottomed in 78 and peaked in 1985, and in that time, the dollar doubled. Then, over the next 7 years, all the way down to about the low in 1992, then it gave up the entire advance, which another way of saying it is that the dollar halved relative to everything else. And then it messed around for a couple of years. By the time we got around to 95, it rallied all the way through until 2002. Then it went straight down again, and it didn't really bottom again until 2008. So not quite the 7 years, but certainly very close to it. Then a lot of messing around. This kind of messing around was very similar to the messing around that we saw in 1990, in the early 1990s. And then it broke out, and we've been rallying for 8 years. Now, this is a long in the tooth rally, and it is rolling over. Now, if the cyclicality is going to remain intact, then we should anticipate that the dollar is going to trend downwards. And not only that it's going to trend downwards, but that it's going to continue trending downwards for years. And in order for that to happen, then there's going to have to be an acute need for issuance of more dollars. Since the US economy and the US dollar is the reserve currency, there's always going to be an excess of supply because the USA runs deficits in order to ensure that there's enough of dollars out there in the world. But the so that also creates a certain amount of demand. In order for the dollar to trend downwards, other currencies have to go up against it, and you have to have interest rate differentials that aren't as favorable for the dollar. So then you start to think about economic disparities where the US economy would enter a period of subpar growth relative to the rest of the world. That would also contribute to a lower dollar environment overall. But the chart analysis and certainly the cyclicality should at least inform us that we can anticipate that the dollar will be weaker all the way from now through to about 2029 to 2030. And if that is indeed the case, well, then it would represent a very significant big bull market for gold. And gold prices would then experience a multiplication factor. Now, if gold goes up, then we're going to see greater interest in the high beta ways of playing gold. So, obviously, then silver is the go-to poor man's gold, and much more volatile and a much smaller market than gold is. And the price is now firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. This range that's been underway for the last 3 years looks like a first step above the base. And when it does break on the upside, it is likely to do so in really quite an emphatic fashion. Then, as precious metal prices appreciate, then what we start to see is demand starting to come through for high beta type instruments. So the gold miners, which are generally the larger ones in the GDX ETF, are also bouncing here and above the $30 level. This also has a very similar pattern to what we see in silver, where we have the first step above the base. Now, as we look further down the line, it's usually the established mines go first because investors are not willing to give the new bull market hypothesis the benefit of the doubt. So if they want to get exposure, but they don't want to take a big bet, they'll buy the big miners. And then when they do well, and people start to get greedy and start thinking about where the big potential is, well, they'll start to buy silver miners. So that's an additionally high beta way of playing it. And then as growth in the trend and as a capital flowing into the asset class improves, well, then it's the junior gold miners will do better. Now, they are also bouncing from around the region of the 200-day moving average, but then the index did pull all the way back down into the base formation, and we do have a sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 8 months. And more broadly, there's a mild upward bias within the longer term base formation, which is heading on for 8 years right now. Then, after we see a big move higher in the junior miners, then people start looking at explorers. And the Explorers ETF is still right inside the base formation. It has not broken on the upside. This base formation has been underway for a decade now. And the price today is still at a fraction of where the peaks were back in 2011. So it is quite likely that when gold breaks on the upside, we're going to see an order of operations bull market, very similar to what evolved in that period up from the lows in 2001 to the peak in 2011. But of course, if the dollar is breaking downwards, then not only is that going to increase the supply, but it's going to act also as fuel for a capital flight away from dollar assets into other assets that have better appreciation capabilities. So let's look, for example, at let's stay with commodities for a moment, and we'll move to emerging markets. But the LME Metals Index is beginning to steady, and this is not just about liquidity, it's also about China. And China have been slow to support the property market. They want to try and snuff out speculative activity in the property sector. They do not want to have a crash, but more than that, they don't want to have a bubbly environment for the property market either. So that means they're going to try and do a Goldilocks and have not too much stimulus, but probably not too little either, and somewhere in between. And if China's demand improves, then that is positive for the industrial resources. So the LME Metals Index is bouncing from the lower side of its range in here. And we've seen an improvement in iron ore prices as well. So that's also a bit of an indication that there is a more bullish environment for the industrial resources overall. But then, of course, we have to pay attention to the fact that we are still in a liquidity tight environment. So even though we're seeing support starting to come through and prices steadying up, it's on the assumption that we are back in a benign economic global environment, and that stimulus will be forthcoming, and that it will ensure that asset price appreciation will be back on the menu once more. So there's definitely more interest starting to come through into the industrial resources in lockstep with the devaluation of the dollar. We've also started to see that agricultural commodities have steadied up, and particularly in the grains and beans. Now, the big challenge here, of course, is that the higher agricultural prices go, the greater the pressure that is going to put on inflation. And that's an especially important point for emerging markets. So wheat prices had declined steadily from the peak in 2022, and that was on the realization that Ukraine isn't the only country that is producing wheat, and Russia's wheat market, our wheat producers, haven't had nearly the same kinds of challenges that Ukrainian farmers have had. But wheat prices were putting in a higher reaction low in here today, which suggests that the breakout from the base formation is going to be sustained. And then also corn prices are marching higher here and have begun to unwind the short term over sold condition. Now, we had a very acute decline about 3 weeks ago. So I think in some cases it is worth just paying attention to the daily chart for an individual commodity, and we see the incredible decline, and now we're starting to see a more impressive rebound overall. So if we look at an agriculture fund, and the DB agriculture fund is futures based, so when it is appreciating, that is against a background where you have a prevailing contango environment for the vast majority of futures and all futures markets, and then we also have higher interest rates, which means that those contango costs can really amp higher. But the agriculture fund is appreciating and bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. So that's probably also then going to start to create demand for anything that can help to supplement the supply. And Mosaic, having pulled back very violently, it is now coming back up to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this looks like a process of mean reversion and of a reversionary rally underway. It will at least have to sustain a move back above the 200-day moving average in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I will also just put up the Nutrien chart. It's more of a focus on potash, and the share has also pulled back, perhaps not quite as violently as Mosaic has, and it is showing the same kind of steadier action overall in the near term. So we have evidence of agricultural commodities and industrial resources firming up in here. And then oil prices are locked still in a very tight trading environment. We had the pop on the upside at the beginning of this week, and then towards the end of the week, we started to see prices ebbing somewhat. So not quite sustaining the move above the $80 area, testing the region of the 200-day moving average for this downtrend. And there has been a sequence of lower rally highs for all of the last year. If we're going to have a commodity bull market, it is hard to imagine that that could take place without oil also participating. So, and we do have some fairly convincing arguments for why oil could take part in a new commodity bull market, because OPEC is curtailing supply. There has been a dearth of new, investments in new production in the USA, in Europe, and then following the Deepwater Horizon accident, drilling offshore basically died a death and is being revitalized more recently. But this is still an environment where the price is being sustained at reasonably high levels by the absence of new demand. And of course, OPEC is also reducing the supply that they send into the market. On the demand side, it's about China. And the big question for China is, are they going to stimulate? And this is really all there is to talk about. Prices for oil were down today, so we're still in a downward trending environment. If, on the other hand, we get a break above the $80 area and a sustained move above the 200-day moving average, then that will change the trend. But we're just not there yet. Now, when we pay attention to how the energy stocks are performing, well, higher for longer in oil prices is generally benign for stocks, but they have not broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And those stocks really do need oil prices to exceed the $100 area. And without that, then this is a significant loss of uptrend consistency. And we had the softening up blow to that recovery about a year ago. And since then, prices have just gone sideways. So we're going to have to see significantly higher oil prices in order to for these shares to really start to play catch up with the wider market. Now, let's also think about emerging markets, because emerging markets benefit when the dollar goes down. Their funding costs go down. A lot of them are borrowing in US dollars. Borrowing in US dollars when the dollar is falling sounds like a fantastic idea. And that also means that as the dollar goes down, some of those currencies will appreciate. The Mexican peso continues to advance and moved to a new recovery high in here this week. So this has been a really impressive appreciation, where the low was around 26 and it currently has a handle of 16 and three quarters. So that's an incredible advance over the space of about 3 years. And then if we look at the Brazilian real, well, the Brazilian real has the benefit of some of the highest interest rates in the world, and then the willingness of the Bank of Brazil to march in and raise rates aggressively to get inflationary pressures under control. So then if we think about what has been learned from this inflation scare over the last couple of years, it's that aggressive action in raising interest rates gets the job done. And obviously some of the developed markets are more levered, and they are therefore inhibited from raising rates as aggressively as some of the emerging markets. And therefore inflation has lasted longer, but the CPI in Brazil continues to fall. And I am very conscious of the fact that during the last big commodity bull market, the Brazilian real trended higher and it bottomed around 4 in late 2003. By the time we got to 2008, it was trading at 150. So the Brazilian real doubled. And that was a major contributor to the willingness of investors to put money to work in the country. So, as we then look at the stock market, there are obviously big mining and oil company weightings within it, and it is testing the upper side of its range in US dollar terms. If we look at this in local currency terms, it is still a range, but the range is right in the region of the peak from back in 2020. If we see gold and oil and industrial resources and agricultural commodities doing better, then it's practically certain that the Brazilian market will play catch up. And then let's think about some of the rest of these markets. So, India's Nifty index pushed on to a new high in here today. The willingness of these emerging market countries to do what is necessary to get inflation under control, then that's helping to support their currencies. It means that foreign investors are looking on them with a much more willing attitude to redeploy cash, because you get the capital market appreciation, you get the dividend, and then you also you get the currency. So those are three important sources of potential future profits that become much more compelling in a weaker dollar environment. And of course then the individual characteristics of the countries like India, with its massive young population and the modern pharmaceuticals industry, that's very significant for a country like India. The commodity exports and the large population are important for Brazil. But then some of the serial laggards within the emerging markets, like Malaysia, have also started to steady up in here. So we've had a downtrend in Malaysia for 6 years, and now it is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to sustain a move above the 200-day moving average in due course. And today, or this week's clear upper dynamics were, I think, really quite convincing. Then Vietnam was among the first countries to really benefit from reshoring or offshoring. And I do apologize, I pressed the wrong button. The Vietnamese index, having pulled back in 2022, continues to rebound in here. And Vietnam is going to continue to benefit from its proximity to China, but then also for its large young population and the reality that it has many of the same manufacturing attributes that China has, just on a somewhat smaller scale. And when we think then about the developed markets that could benefit, well, obviously Brazil doing well because of commodities is a more direct play. Australia is also a major commodity exporter, and with a weakening US dollar, that's important for the ASX 200, and it is bouncing quite clearly from the 7,000 level, and this does look like a broader pattern of consolidation now. We have greater evidence that support is starting to come through. Then, Europe, as a major exporter of value-added machinery, would do well in a rising commodity environment as well. And of course, what this also helps to highlight is that some of the sectors that have the potential to be revitalized by a weaker dollar, well, they're not really involved with the tech sector. The tech sector seems to be doing just fine into a rising interest rate environment. But the Eurostoxx index is starting to steady now from the 200-day moving average. And it's so far holding the break up and out of this exceptionally lengthy range. In fact, I can go all the way back to 2000. And then we have this ranging phase that really didn't break out until 2021. And I think that's an incredibly lengthy ranging phase. But this does look like a first step above it. So we have certainly got the potential for European markets to do well as the dollar goes downwards, and on a relative performance basis, then that's likely to attract greater interest into the ex-US markets. But let's pay attention to what's actually happening in the US markets. So there is this argument going on right now about whether there's going to be a soft landing or a hard landing. And the fact that commercial, I guess, excuse me, the commercial entities that have really driven this incredible bull trend over the last decade, they have accumulated market caps in trillions and still have these incredible, strong, trends behind them. But we are in the difficulty of round numbers. It was remarkable that Apple could reach a market cap of a trillion, even more remarkable that it could reach a market cap of 2 trillion, and now it's at a market cap of 3 trillion. And it's not like the earnings are multiplying. In fact, if we look at the exports of machinery out of our the exports out of Taiwan and South Korea of mobile handsets are declining. So I think that there is obviously the risk with some of these larger companies. Now, the 10-year yield is right around 3.8%. It pulled back in the early part of the week and then rebounded somewhat towards the end of the week. And I think that it is quite likely we're going to see deflationary fears prevail. But we also had in here today banks doing better. So JP Morgan came in with record revenues, and it would have been reasonable to anticipate that the share would rebound. But the S&P 500 Banks Index It got up to test that 200-day moving average, and then it failed. So if banks can't rally on good news, then it does suggest that they are going to have to put in greater loan provisions for an eventual recession. The stock market is, I guess, not, let's be more correct. The Nasdaq is pricing in the potential for a soft landing. And we have had an eerily similar decline and advance, and I guess this particular notation is now out of date because it has exceeded the it has exceeded the 200-day moving average. It has pushed up to a greater rebound, a 50% advance from the lows back in October. So this is now a bigger rebound than we saw in 2000. And earnings are priced for potential. The Nasdaq 100 is about to go through a reorientation of weightings to take some of the big weightings off of the larger cap companies, and that is going to help with concentration. But ultimately, we have an index that is back in the region of its peak from 2021. That peak was reached with ample liquidity. We're in an environment right now where they're trying to take liquidity out of control, and when we think then about the fact that the PE ratio is 37, we're not in a cheap market. And if we have a very benign economic environment where we do have a soft landing and unemployment does not rise and inflation gets back under control, and through all of that, company earnings are sustained and improved upon, that really is the best of all possible worlds. I think it is unlikely, but since markets are pricing it in, there's not a lot to be gained to try and fight it. And most particularly, as we look at the yield curve spread, I've been saying on repeated occasions that it is only when this particular measure starts trending higher that one has to be very diligent about stops and thinking about where one is going to get out. Until it starts to trend higher, then we're still in a tightening economic environment. The reason that the yield curve spread marches higher during these kinds of periods is because central banks panic and then they start cutting rates. And the fact that the dollar is so weak, then that is pricing in the potential that we are now approaching the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle. So we're seeing that the dollar rolling over is basically creating demand for hedges, mostly against the dollar. And of course, then it's also going to create opportunities for assets that have been really pressured by higher rates overall. So, when we look at, for example, some of the utilities that have been investing in new infrastructure, well, American Electric Power is one of those. Now, the share peaked in early 2020, then rebounded. Many of the senior executives got big chunks of shares, but dividends haven't kept up with the pace with which interest rates have been rising. So, despite the fact that they're building the infrastructure that is absolutely necessary to meet demand for electricity as a result of rising demand for air conditioning and then the electrification of the transportation sector, are massive demand growth drivers for utilities. But they do need to build the infrastructure, and that has not yet been achieved. So when we think about where the benefits could accrue from lower interest rates, well, then utilities would be a pretty sound way of thinking that they do have the dividends, but the dividends are not competitive with money market funds yielding nearly 5%. But when interest rates start to come down, then the leverage inside some of these utilities will make them look more attractive, and particularly those yields. So then we see the same kind of rationale coming through for some of the buy now, pay later type operations. And these are examples of non-bank lenders. And Affirm has this base formation, and it is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And in Brazil, you have another payments company like PagSeguro, and PagSeguro should benefit when the Brazilians begin to cut interest rates. And Stone Co is another Brazilian financial services company, and it is steadying from the region of the 200-day moving average. It is the non-bank lenders have done best in the quantitative easing environment of the last 15 years. So Apollo Global Management has pushed on to a new recovery high. And although Blackstone is rather heavily exposed to the broader commercial real estate market, it also popped on the upside in here today. I was expecting to also see Brookfield start to look a bit better in here, but the size of the rebound was not nearly as impressive. And I've been not typing particularly effectively here. So Brookfield Asset Management is beginning to steady, but I think the more important point is that they finished on the upper side of their ranges, whereas I think a lot of the banks are going to be crawling back to have discussions about how they can manage their leverage. And that is something that's going to weigh on the commercial banking sector. But now, when we think about the longer term, there's obviously the knock-on effects of work from home. There's geopolitical considerations. There's monetary and fiscal considerations. We have bond yields that have surged higher, and we've had huge volumes of cash taken out of the global system. So there are definitely themes evolving, and emerging markets look more healthy than the wider market. They will certainly benefit from a weaker dollar overall. Commodity prices will also thrive in a strong dollar environment, at least gold and all related instruments will. And the performance of agricultural commodities will do well. Now, obviously, there are also going to be issues. Now, one of the primary sectors that continues to do well because of the belief in the soft landing hypothesis is the mega cap companies. Now, the Nasdaq is very firm and still rising. So there's not a lot to be gained by betting against the soft landing hypothesis. It's when we see the downward dynamic, and that will be when we will have a better entry opportunity on the short side, shorting into such an impressive rebound in assets. Just does not look like a profitable enterprise in the very short term. But I do still think that a recession is inevitable. I don't believe that the Goldilocks scenario is the most likely. I think that bond yields are going to come down. Now, just because of that doesn't mean that technology has to collapse, but when you have companies that have got are worth trillions of dollars and have got a exposure to the threat of antitrust, got exposure to political vice, then there is obviously the potential that we could have government interference. We've certainly got this geopolitical environment right now where government interference is virtually a certainty. There is massive volumes of munitions that need to be replaced. governments aren't in a position to tamper overly with their budgets, so they're going to have to create rules in order to attract that kind of interest. And it does also imply that we're going to move into a more government-controlled environment as we look ahead over time. And that will also create opportunities for regulatory arbitrage. And the market where we have the greatest examples of that right now are carbon emissions, because carbon is a valuable commodity, but carbon emissions are really a government-sponsored market, and we're more than likely going to have quite a few more of those kinds of tariff imposed in order to raise money out of the populations to meet the ideals of the people who are looking at how they can tell the market or tell people how to live their lives. I think that the answer for heat is air conditioning, and the cost of putting air conditioners in people's homes and putting in nuclear energy to power them, that would kill a lot of the concerns about rising prices. It would help to keep inflationary pressures under control. And of course, because it's an easy answer, it's unlikely that it's going to be the be-all and end-all. And the Global X Uranium ETF, it's still hovering above the 1,000-day moving average, but it does just need to break up and out of this little range and break it up through the peaks around $25. Now, I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.